It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Super Soakers, good afternoon. Welcome aboard. Deadly flooding in Tennessee, a powerful deluge in New England. That tops the news today. Let's start way down south in the hard-hit Volunteer State.
Look at the power of what it did. Another upside-down vehicle.
Record rain in Middle Tennessee left 22 dead, 20 more are missing.
There's houses moved off their foundation, cars and trees. I mean, this is almost a biblical proportions here.
Hard to believe. 17 inches of rain in less than 24 hours in the city of Waverly, 60 miles west of Nashville. The search for survivors continues today.
Among the missing, 2-year-old Kellen Cole Burrow.
They were on the clotheslines hanging on. She had a hold of all of them, trying to keep all of them.
The waters ripped Kellen away from his mother and 4 siblings. The long road to recovery has begun as residents try to fix the things that can be replaced.
Meantime, in New England, folks are still reeling from the remnants of Tropical Storm Henri.
The damage is significant, the wind especially.
What's left of the storm continues to sit and spin in the North Atlantic after crashing ashore early Sunday. Reporter Kathy Park.
The storm is being blamed for widespread power outages, inland flooding, as well as damage to property.
More than 130,000 left powerless by Henri, and the flooding isn't done yet. Forecaster Jeff Berardelli.
We're going to see a general 2 to 4 to 5 inches of rain, but some places we'll see an additional 10 inches of rainfall, and that's why we're likely to see very dangerous flash flooding.
9 inches of rain's already fallen in parts of New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and Rhode Island from Tropical Storm Henri. Cuomo's last day. That is the other big story we're following today. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo delivering a farewell address from his office in New York City this hour. He is in the last few hours of a job he has held for more than a decade. The curtain comes down on the Cuomo administration at 1 minute before midnight tonight. At that time, Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul takes over as the state's 57th governor and first ever female governor. Earlier this month, a report from the state attorney general's office accused Cuomo of sexual harassment. The soon-to-be ex-gov is also accused of trying to cover up COVID deaths at nursing homes.
He's going to be known as the governor who harassed 11 women and helped kill my mother and 15,000 other seniors in New York State. That's what's going to be his legacy.
That Brooklyn woman lost her mom in a nursing home last spring. Now, even though Cuomo's resigning, the FBI and the U.S. Attorney General's office is still investigating the nursing home scandal. 5 district attorneys are looking into the sexual harassment claims. Incoming Governor Hochul says she will fully cooperate with these ongoing investigations. Andrew Cuomo not leaving office empty-handed, however. He gets to collect a $50,000 a year pension. The Taliban rejecting any talk of extending the deadline for our troop or from our departure from Afghanistan. U.S. officials are pushing President Biden to buy more time from that terror group. They want us out by August 31st. Trey Yingst is in Qatar in the Middle East today.
We are learning more today about how the Taliban views that August 31st withdrawal deadline. The group saying today this is a red line and they are unwilling to compromise. This could certainly put American forces on the ground at greater risk.
The Biden administration struggling to defend its handling of the exodus from Afghanistan. Here's Major Garrett of CBS News grilling our Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, yesterday.
So we have to ask the Taliban for permission for American citizens to leave. True or not true?
They are in control of Kabul. That is the reality. That's the reality that we have to deal with.
Retired 4-star Army General Jack Keane.
Secretary Blinken's statement. I mean, I don't like the implication. Yes, they're in control of Kabul. Therefore, they're in control of our destiny. And we should have our way here. The United States national honor is on the line here.
Dozens of military transport jets expected to land in Kabul today. President Biden admits the pullout has been chaotic, but he is confident leaving Afghanistan was the right thing to do.
I think when this is over, the American people have a clear understanding of what I did, why we did it. And but look, that's the job. My job is to make judgments. My job is to make judgments no one else can or will make. I made them. I'm convinced I'm absolutely correct in not deciding to send more young women and men to war for a war that, in fact, is no longer warranted.
Seven Afghans were killed on Sunday outside the Kabul airport, including a two-month-old child, crushed to death by the crowds of people trying to flee the Taliban. Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee.
I will say Joe Biden has done something I wasn't sure he would do. He fulfilled a campaign promise. He promised to bring America together in unity. He's done it. We're all unified in total agreement, for the most part, that Joe Biden has totally bungled and botched this operation and humiliated the United States of America.
A pastor in Afghanistan today said the Taliban has a hit list of Christians and is targeting them for extermination. He adds, there is no longer a safe place for Christians in Afghanistan. The not-for-profit ministry Sat7 says the Taliban is demanding people's iPhones, and those found to have Bibles on them are being systematically killed. On the COVID front today, drug maker Pfizer's coronavirus vaccine got full FDA approval this morning, taking it past emergency use authorization. Former acting FDA commissioner Dr. Brent Girard says Americans should feel confident about getting the shot.
Poll said about 30% of those who have not been vaccinated would become vaccinated, feel very confident about that once the vaccine received full approval. That just happened. The vaccine is fully approved, and I am very hopeful that this will push people over the edge to go get the vaccine.
Dr. Z. Shaw is dean of Brown University School of Public Health.
For a lot of companies and businesses and schools, they have been waiting for this full approval before mandating vaccines. So I think it's going to set off a whole new wave of vaccinations.
Right now, the U.S. is seeing an average of about 130,000 new daily COVID cases. That's up 230% from this time last month. A new poll shows most young people who call themselves Christians do not believe that Jesus is the only way to salvation. The Probe Ministry survey finds more than 60% of U.S. Christians between the ages of 18 and 39 think Buddha, Muhammad, and Jesus are all valid paths to salvation. Well, if you have been thinking of doing something nice for your pastor, now would be a good time to act.
With record numbers of clergymen saying they feel burned out these days, the National Association of Evangelicals is launching the Bless Your Pastor campaign. NAE spokesman Brian Kluth says, quote, pastors and church staff are emotionally drained. They have tirelessly served their churches and communities through a very difficult season with little respite. Now is an important time to let them know how appreciated they are.
Michael Harrington with that report today. Still to come on the Noon Report, cleanup continues in the flood-ravaged Twin Tiers. School reopening guidelines announced today for Western New York and Penn State's Zoom In. What's that all about? We'll talk about it after we get a check of the forecast with Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Tracking the remnants of Tropical Storm Henri soaking parts of the Northeast, and lots of tropical air bathing all of the Northeast for now. I'll be back with forecast details coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin, look for you then. In the meantime, a state of emergency still in effect for multiple towns in Steuben County, New York, after last week's horrific flooding. A 31-year-old Greenwood woman died in the storm. She's been identified as Clarissa Bivens, and leaves behind a husband and son. Many roads in Canisteo, Jasper, Woodhull, and Addison remain closed. June Crandall with the group Be the One Storm Steuben is actively assisting displaced residents.
We're going to do as much as we can at Be the One Steuben, and we are going to just keep encouraging our neighbors and friends to get out there and do as much as you can too. That's what we need to do. We need to pull together, stay strong, faith, family, friends. That's what it's about.
Disaster relief teams from across the country descended on the region today. They include Mennonite Disaster Services and the American Red Cross. Those workers will be assisting residents with cleanup and construction efforts. If you'd like to help out, a command center has been set up in hard-hit Woodhull. Erie County, New York, went public today with its school reopening guidelines. County Executive Mark Poloncarz.
Our goal is to return all students to an in-school learning experience
for every day of the school year.
The guidance includes face masks for all while inside school buildings and on school buses, regardless of your vaccination status.
This is not a permanent document for the entire school year. It is subject to change based on what we see in the local community. And we will modify this if needed as the situation changes.
In addition to the face mask requirement, Erie County will also be mandating daily health screenings for anyone entering a school building. This would include daily temperature checks for all students, faculty, and visitors. Dozens attended a vaccine mandate protest rally yesterday afternoon in Wisner Park, Elmira, New York. Recent COVID rules for healthcare workers not sitting well with some.
People can take the vaccine if they want, that's their choice, but we don't feel like we need to take this vaccine when we've had proper protection.
Organizer Rachel Kimball says both the vaccinated and unvaccinated joined forces at yesterday's rally.
Once we heard the mandate, a lot of people were messaging me and contacting me to ask what were we going to do. So I felt obligated that someone needed to do something.
Kimball hopes incoming Governor Kathy Hochul will change the mandates and allow healthcare workers to make their own decisions about vaccines without having to worry about losing their jobs. At least 250 Penn State faculty protesting the university's decision not to mandate the vaccine. They're staging a Zoom-in today. That means students who would normally be in person are forced to do school online. The Coalition for a Just University, a faculty-based group formed last year out of growing concern with Penn State's COVID protocols. They are the ones who organized this protest. Both the university and the Penn State Parents Council opposed today's Zoom-in at Penn State. Western New York Congressman Brian Higgins is blasting the Biden administration over its decision to extend the U.S.-Canada border restriction until September 21st.
The Biden administration raised an expectation. They said that we are going to get back to a sense of normalcy by July 4th. We're long past that date. No explanation, no vision coming out of the administration, the White House, as to what people can expect.
The border restriction extension prohibits non-essential travel for Canadians coming into this country. Americans who are fully vaccinated can travel north of the border. A Pennsylvania state senator told supporters in Montoursville yesterday that he will not give up the fight for an audit of the 2020 election outcome in the Keystone State. Republican Doug Mastriano has called for a forensic investigation of the vote. He wants to impound voting machines in Tioga, York, in Philadelphia counties. A teen driver crashed into a home in Lockport, New York last night after being involved in a road rage incident. The Niagara County Sheriff says the 17-year-old lost control of his car while speeding around a curve. The vehicle wound up striking a guardrail, a tree, and a fire hydrant before hitting the home. Luckily, no one was injured when that vehicle came to a rest inside a first floor bedroom. The 2-minute drill next in sports, and Sonny starting us off today in Williamsport, PA at the Major League Baseball Little League Classic.
Yeah, Bob, nearly 2,000 fans packed into historic Bowman Field last night, including 16 Little League teams who screamed the loudest for Angel star Shohei Ohtani. But it was Indians starter Cal Quantrill that put on a show, striking out 7, allowing just 2 hits in Cleveland's 3-0 win. Cal loved playing in front of the Little Leaguers.
You know what? I think that maybe the coolest part of the whole day was just the opening ceremony. I got to say hi to some of the guys as I was warming up. We had the whole line of the kids out there, and I don't know, it was just cool. It's cool seeing those guys getting excited about our game. I think it's exciting we're pitching in front of them.
The Angels star Mike Trout did not play, but he loved being in South Williamsport.
It's truly amazing just to be able to come here, play baseball, and meet your favorite baseball player. So, you know, having both Angels and Indians, yeah, you know, a lot of talent, so it's great.
In Little League action today, the undefeateds play as Texas battle Michigan, Oregon play South Dakota. Elimination games with Ohio, Louisiana, and Washington and Nebraska fighting to advance. History
That's
in Toronto.
Gone. Number 500 in history
victory for Miguel Cabrera.
Miggy became just the 28th player in Major League Baseball history to reach 500 career home runs in Sunday's 5-3 win in Toronto. The 2012 Triple Crown winner, now just 46 hits away from reaching another milestone of 3,000 career hits. J.D. Davis homer drove in four, helping the Mets to avoid a sweep. They beat the Dodgers 7-2 in Los Angeles, snapping L.A.'s 9-game winning streak and remain 7 games out of the wild card. The Phillies beat the Padres 7-4 off the bat of Rhys Hoskins, who hit a homer in the fourth and then in the fifth.
Two pitch, and Rhys swings and sends this one in the air. Out to left field. Forget about it.
The Phillies are 5 out of the wild card. Adam Wainwright threw 8 shutout innings. The Cardinals topped the Pirates 3-0 in St. Louis. The Nationals lose to the Brewers 7-3 for their 9th loss in 12 games, but right up I-95 in Baltimore. An even bigger losing streak as the Orioles fall to Atlanta 3-1 for their 18th straight loss. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphiette.
Oof, tough to be an O's fan these days. Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on the Noon Report, Cuomo's last day. How to pray for Afghanistan and neighbor helping neighbor in the flood-ravaged Twin Tiers.
The queen of all virtues, G.K. Chesterton said, was gratitude. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Recently, a friend wrote to me and reminded me of a Chuck Colson commentary from all the way back in 2005. It's aged rather well, I might say, and that's because despite how much things have changed, despite how much more chaotic the headlines might be today than they were when Chuck first delivered this commentary years ago, the core truth is the same, that a posture of gratitude is one that recognizes whose world it actually is and where we fit in God's overarching plan to make all things new. So here's Chuck Colson from 2005 talking about gratitude.
The great reformer John Calvin once said that gratitude was the essence of the Christian life. The notion of gratitude is hot these days. Search the internet and you'll find more than a million sites about thankfulness. For example, university psychologists recently conducted a research project on gratitude and thanksgiving. They divided participants into three groups. People in the first group practiced daily exercises like writing in a gratitude journal. They reported higher levels of alertness, determination, optimism, energy, and less depression and stress than the control group. Unsurprisingly, they were also a lot happier than the participants who were told to keep an account of all the bad things that happened each day. One of the psychologists concluded that though a practice of gratitude is a key to most religions, its benefits extend to the general population, regardless of faith or no faith. As my colleague Ellen Vaughn writes in her new book, Radical Gratitude, no one is going to disagree that gratitude is a virtue. But Ellen says counting our blessings and conjuring an attitude of to whom it may concern gratitude, Pollyanna style, is not enough. What do we do when cancer strikes? I have two children battling it right now. Or when loved ones die? When we find ourselves in the midst of brokenness and real suffering. That, she says, is where gratitude gets radical. While they often mingle together in the life of a follower of Christ, there are actually two types of thankfulness. One is secondary, the other primary. The secondary sort is thankfulness for blessings received. The great preacher and once president of Princeton University, Jonathan Edwards, called thanks for such blessings natural gratitude. It's a good thing. But this gratitude doesn't come naturally, if at all, when things go badly. It can't buoy us up in difficult times. Edwards calls the deeper, primary form of thankfulness gracious gratitude. It gives thanks not for goods received, but for who God is, for his character, his goodness, love, power, excellencies, regardless of favors received. And it's real evidence of the Holy Spirit working in a person's life. This gracious gratitude for who God is also goes to the heart of who we are in Christ. It is relational rather than conditional. Though our world may shatter, we are secure in Him. We can have peace in times of pain. The fount of our joy, the love of the God who made us and saved us, cannot be quenched by any power that exists. People who are filled with such radical gratitude are unstoppable, irrepressible, overflowing with what C.S. Lewis called the good infection, the supernatural, refreshing love of God that draws others to Him.
That was Chuck Colson in a Breakpoint commentary from May the 17th, 2005. It's aged well because it's a truth that transcends cultural moments and the challenges of one age to the next. And in it all, we are to be grateful to God for the fact that He is our Creator, the fact that He has sent Christ as our Redeemer, and He is overseeing the scope of history and allows us to be part of what He's doing in the world. It's always a good habit to take some time day by day to be grateful. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
All right, John, thank you very much. It is air that you wear out there again today. Kevin Williams forecast next.
Here is your family life weather forecast. It'll be very humid this afternoon and warm. We'll have clouds and sunshine, a few scattered showers and thunderstorms around. And again, watch for some areas of flooding in far eastern Pennsylvania. High temperatures in the 80s, dropping tonight toward the mid-60s to near 70. The skies turn partly cloudy. Tomorrow, steamy heat and hazy sunshine, high in the 80s to near 90. Wednesday, some sunshine, hot, humid, slight chance of a late day thunderstorm. High temperatures Wednesday, 80s and low 90s.
All right, summer not done yet. Thank you, Kevin. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price, and here's what's happening this Monday afternoon, the 23rd of August. The Food and Drug Administration today gave full approval to Pfizer's COVID vaccine. The hope is this action will encourage more of us on the fence about the shot to get off that fence and get vaccinated.
Federal health officials hoping full approval rather than just emergency use authorization will persuade some of the hesitant to roll up their sleeves for COVID shots. It's also likely to trigger vaccine mandates by companies and universities amid a national surge in COVID cases driven by the Delta variant. Sarah Lee Kessler, New York.
It is the last day at the office for New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. He is delivering a farewell address this afternoon in New York City. The disgraced chief executive stepping down at midnight tonight after being accused of sexually harassing nearly a dozen women.
He is leaving Albany on a very soft landing. This is a gracious exit. He has not admitted to doing anything wrong, and he gets to leave Albany. That's why I still feel very strongly about continuing the impeachment process.
Queens Democrat Ron Kim says it's an outrage that the soon-to-be ex-gov gets to collect $50,000 a year in pension. Aside from the sexual harassment claims, Cuomo is also accused of trying to cover up COVID deaths at nursing homes. Janice Dean of Fox News feels strongly that had it not been for the governor, both of her in-laws would be alive today. She adds, seeing him out of office, though, brings some closure.
You know, the spotlight that he loves so much is finally dimming, unless he goes over to CNN and has a show with his brother, which is, of course, very possible. But, I mean, he's leaving, we think, we hope.
Dean says unless the governor's impeached, though, he could and probably will make a political comeback. Super soakers, multiple storms causing water woes in the deep south and northeast in hard-hit Waverly, Tennessee. This man watched his home float away.
My home is history. Houses washed them down. I mean, this is no lie.
The search continues in Tennessee today for more than 20 people missing from the flash flooding. Another 22 died in the storms. This man recovered the body of his friend.
I just went and got one of my best friends. It's recovered him when he was drowned in this. And it's sitting here thinking about that. Yeah. It's tough, but we're going to move forward.
Meantime, in the Northeast, folks are picking up the pieces from Tropical Storm Henri, which continues to batter parts of Pennsylvania, downstate New York, New Jersey, and much of New England. The U.S. continues the mass exodus out of Afghanistan. 37,000 people have been evacuated from there since the Taliban takeover just over a week ago.
This is the worst executed plan from a military standpoint in the history of America.
Kentucky Congressman Jim Comer not mincing words there. The White House reportedly in negotiations with the Taliban to expand that end-of-the-month deadline for our withdrawal. Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse.
August 31 was a stupid, arbitrary, politically driven deadline. The Taliban needs to know they don't dictate the timetable on American lives.
Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee says the U.S. should not be asking permission from the Taliban for the safe evacuation of our citizens.
You know, it's ridiculous. It's like asking the foxes, would they please take really good care of the chickens if we leave the coop open for them? I mean, the Taliban can't be trusted. You're asking a group of terrorists. Who does he think these people are?
A recent CBS News poll shows 63% of Americans support the withdrawal of American troops from Afghanistan, but 74% say it has gone badly.
There is no way to evacuate this many people without pain and loss of heartbreaking images you see on television. It's just a fact.
President Biden continuing to defend his handling of the pullout. More from correspondent Steve Futterman.
The president acknowledged the process is not easy or simple.
The evacuation of thousands of people from Kabul is going to be hard and painful.
But he said people are slowly getting out, and it's not just Americans.
We're also working to move our Afghan allies who stood with us side by side.
As for the August 31st target date to get everyone out,
there's discussions going on among us and the military about extending.
That target date is now 8 days away.
Former U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley accuses the White House of surrendering to the Taliban.
There are times where you have to negotiate with the devil, but you negotiate with the devil from a point of strength. You don't do it from a point of weakness. They have surrendered the American people and actually withdrew our troops before they withdrew the American people, and they've abandoned our Afghan allies.
Next at noon, a conversation with Dr. Tom Copeland, a professor of political science at Colorado Christian University. He's talking to our own Tracy Lynn about how to pray for Afghanistan.
Well, I think fundamentally we need to pray for peace. And obviously, it's not going to look like the total laying down of arms at this point. The Taliban is too aggressive for that to happen. But I think we can pray for safety, at least, for, you know, for Afghan civilians, whether they are Muslim, Christian, or whatever. There is a great danger to all the civilians there. I think we could be praying specifically for our troops and embassy staff who are still there trying to help people get out of the country, and pray for the something like 15,000 American relief workers who are stuck in the country. And there are tens of thousands of relief workers from other parts of the world who are also stuck there. I think, finally, prayer for wisdom for our own political leaders. You know, scripture is clear that we are to pray for those in authority. And so I think we should pray for wisdom for them.
What are some practical ways we can also help?
Well, you know, the situation on the ground is changing day by day. So in some ways, I think being on standby mode, you know, kind of having our lamps trimmed and ready to step in when we get a good opportunity to do so. There are really a couple kinds of organizations that are involved at this point. Certainly as Afghans begin to come out of the country and are resettled, some of them will be resettled here in the United States. And so there are good organizations like World Relief, Catholic Relief Services, Episcopal Migration Ministries, Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services, where folks can both donate but also serve and help people get resettled. So I think that's an important thing for Christians to be involved in. At this point, it's very difficult for organizations that are operating in country in Afghanistan. You know, it's not like an earthquake in Haiti where Christians will hop on airplanes and fly down to help with relief or something. We can't do that with Afghanistan. But there are other organizations like World Vision, Samaritan's Purse, the Nazarene Fund is putting together funding for airlift to try to help bring people out of the country. But I think at this point, the best that folks can do is research those organizations, go to their websites, find out what they're doing, how they're raising money, and so on. At this point, you know, I think it's that immediate crisis response that I think we can be supporting. I would also add that I think local churches can be involved, whether it's doing fundraisers, hosting prayer meetings, perhaps educating people. A lot of us have not paid much attention to Afghanistan for the last couple of years, and so bringing in speakers who can talk about what's happened there. And a lot of churches are part of denominations that also have relief arms. And so I would encourage folks to check with their local church and see what else they can do.
With the conflict so far away from home, Tom, how do we not grow apathetic to the situation and instead stay engaged in fighting for those oppressed around the world?
You know, the scripture talks about not growing weary in doing good. And it's easy to grow weary in that doing good. We see so many needs around us in our neighborhood and in our cities and states and so on and around the world. I think, again, it's essential to have a prayer list. Pray for not only Afghanistan, but you think about other places in the world where, for example, Christians are being persecuted in China and North Korea, in Syria and Iraq and Egypt and Nigeria. So I think it has to be on our hearts to be praying for fellow believers and then doing, yes, what we can to advocate for human rights and religious freedom around the world.
Obviously, we can't take in every refugee, although I think many of us are thinking, well, could we help someone? But how do we show sympathy and empathy for our brothers and sisters around the globe that lack the freedoms that we possess in the U.S.?
Well, you know, the sympathy and empathy are something that's up to each one of us as individuals to feel that, perhaps to become educated, you know, about those challenges. I'm a professor, so I think education is crucial. But it's also true that we need to advocate, I think, with our government where we think they can make a difference in promoting freedom in other parts of the world. We're going to debate for many years now the wisdom of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and so on. And yet, the 20 years that we spent in Afghanistan were not wasted. We protected human rights. We protected religious freedom. We kept the Taliban at bay for 20 years. And we just have to pray that, you know, God has planted some seeds in Afghanistan and elsewhere thanks to that.
Yeah. He's still God, even when we don't understand, even when there are bullies with guns. He's still God.
Right.
Dr. Tom Copeland, professor of political science at Colorado Christian University, speaking to our own Tracy Lynn. You can hear Tracy's entire interview on Afghanistan. Check out this week's Missions in Action podcast at familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. It was a rough weekend from the Tennessee Valley to parts of the Northeast in terms of flooding rains. The expectation is across our region, quieter conditions over the next several days, but we will continue to live, work, and breathe tropical air. We're in this soup for the next several days. It'll be very humid this afternoon and warm. We'll have clouds, sunshine, a few scattered showers and thunderstorms around. And again, watch for some areas of flooding in far eastern Pennsylvania. High temperatures in the 80s, dropping tonight toward the mid-60s to near 70. The skies turn partly cloudy. Tomorrow, steamy heat and hazy sunshine, the high in the 80s to near 90. Wednesday, some sunshine, hot, humid, slight chance of a late-day thunderstorm. High temperatures Wednesday, 80s and low 90s.
All right, Kevin, thank you. Find that new neighbor helping neighbor. Recover from the flood in Steuben County, New York.
The Edison, New York Little League program is pitching in to help out next-door Woodall after last week's devastating storms. Over the weekend, seven ball players from Edison put on their boots and headed to the flood zone. They assisted in debris removal efforts at four homes and a farm in Woodall. Their Little League coach, Michael Reese, says the community project helped the kids learn the value of teamwork and love for community. Due to the flooding, the Edison Little League has no place to play fall ball this year. Still, those kids volunteer to help out others in need. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
And that is happening all across the Twin Tiers right now. Some pretty incredible people there. And that's the world we live in, Monday, August 23rd. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.